Separating the policy from the politics, delving deeper into what is happening in our world today, and sharing the information you may not know if you didn't listen to this show. iHub Radio presents The Lovable Liberal. This is the Anita Rufus Show, civil discourse on current events and politics. Here's Anita.
All right. Thank you so much for joining me. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal. You're listening to iHub Radio, and this is a good day. It's all over but the lawsuits. Joe Biden has been declared the 46th president of the United States. It isn't official yet. First of all, there are still some more states to finish counting absentee ballots and provisional ballots and military ballots. And it is quite possible and even probable that Joe Biden's total number of electoral votes will go well over 300, well more than he needs. I heard a fact today that I found really interesting. You know, I watch everything, all of the cable news channels, all of the network news channels. New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, Axios. I mean, I'm drowning in news. But I heard this fact today that most of you may not have heard. 48 years ago. Now, remember, Biden is going to be the 46th president of the United States. 48 years ago, on this very day, Joe Biden was first elected to the Senate of the United States. Same day. And maybe the most exciting thing for me, aside from the fact that Donald Trump will not have a second term as president, but perhaps the most exciting thing, and the thing that I don't think any of us paid enough attention to, is that Kamala Harris will be the first woman and the first person of color ever to serve as vice president. And who knows, potentially even as president, but that's going way ahead of ourselves. But I had this feeling when I saw the votes starting to come in and realized how close a lot of these states would be and how many people voted for Donald Trump. And I thought, you know, it was very interesting from a political point of view. Forget about policy for a minute. From a purely political point of view, very early on after Joe Biden chose Kamala Harris as his running mate, the Trump campaign and Trump himself were putting out little stuff about, you know, this woman with her sharp voice and silly laugh and whatever else they could throw at her. But they had spent so much time putting out the word that Joe Biden was senile and maybe he had dementia and couldn't hold up and had no energy, which of course, as by the time the campaign was over, we saw that none of that was true. However, what they put out in addition, and some of it was just that dog whistle stuff below the surface, what they were putting out was Joe Biden is not his own person, and he is going to be run by the very, very liberal side of the Democratic Party, which he is not a member of. He has always been a centrist, progressive, but a centrist. And the fact that Kamala Harris had this record as being a very liberal voter in the Senate, and they kept putting this stuff out there, almost sub rosa in some cases, that Joe Biden would be pushed out of the presidency because he was certainly not up to the job. And therefore, what we were really going to be voting for was whether we wanted a woman, and particularly a woman of color, to be president. And they kind of dropped that. They didn't make a big deal out of it. It was early on after she was named. But I honestly believed as we headed toward Election Day and then began to see the count coming in, that that little germ of white resentment, white grievance, which has been so much a part of the base that Donald Trump has put together, I think that had a lot to do, even on the most subliminal level, with the fact that the vote was as close as it was. I think there were a lot of people who bought into that and who didn't like the idea of even the possibility of a woman, let alone a woman of color, being able to sit in that chair in the Oval Office. But that's just my attitude. I am thrilled that the first woman and the first person of color will be assisting a president who I honestly believe, and you ought to believe, is someone who wants to bring the country together to move things forward in the most united way. Now, there's also another fact about this election that I think is really worth celebrating, and that is more than 160 million Americans voted. That represented about 67% of all the eligible voting population. And it's the largest participation at 67%. The largest participation in an American election since 1900. So people were certainly motivated, whatever the underlying reasons may have been. And the Associated Press called Pennsylvania for Joe Biden this morning. Now, he was also able to capture Wisconsin and Michigan and Arizona, three states that Trump did carry in 2016. And Joe Biden has now run up a record, receiving the most number of votes cast for any presidential candidate in history, more than 73 million votes. The previous record was 69,500,000, and that was set by Barack Obama in 2008 when Joe Biden was also on the ticket as vice president. Meanwhile, Trump falsely claimed victory on election night and said he was going to call on the Supreme Court to stop counting ballots in states where he was ahead. But of course, he wanted more counting in states where he was behind. There has been no logic whatsoever in any of the stuff that Trump has been putting out since election night. And when you realize who Donald Trump is, it is not surprising. He can't possibly be willing to see himself as a loser. And it just seems to me that all of this, we're going to, you know, lawsuits and all the way to the Supreme Court, and already courts are saying, no, no, the rules were followed. No, no, you're grasping at straws. In fact, technically speaking, you don't go to court without evidence that a crime might have been committed. But what they want to do is go to court to force the court to tell them that they have to get evidence, which is absolutely ridiculous. So Trump declared himself the winner at about 2:30 in the morning Eastern time on election night. But now he says that Biden should not claim victory. Again, the illogic of all of this is enough to make you just want to tear your hair out. Trump tweeted Friday evening, last night, "Joe Biden should not wrongfully claim the office of president. I could make that claim also." Well, technically you can't, Mr. President, because you didn't get enough electoral votes. Now, the options for Donald Trump are quite limited. He's unlikely to succeed at most of what he's trying to do in the courts. These are like Hail Mary passes when all else is going to fail. But there are steps that he can take, and he is certainly willing to do whatever he can, even though there are some in the Republican Party who are saying, you know, maybe it's time to accept reality. He can litigate to block some of these late arriving mail-in ballots. And by the way, there is a process going on right now where they call what they call ballot curing. There have been people lined up outside some of the places where they're counting votes, where ballots were pulled off because they weren't perfect. The signature maybe didn't perfectly match, or maybe the signature was left off, or they put their birth date instead of the date they were signing it. Things like that happen. And I certainly believe that since our election laws are so complex and so different from state to state, I honestly believe that if somebody can show that they did vote legitimately, then their vote ought to count. And that's what curing is all about. So they're doing a lot of that right now in various states. And the fact that ballots came in after Election Day, particularly when you realize that the president did everything he could to slow down the mail, that doesn't mean they're not legitimate ballots based on the rules in each state. Some states say if the ballot's not there by a certain time, 8 p.m. on election night, then they don't count, which is why so many people were asked to bring their ballots in and not put them in the mail after a certain time. But there are other states, and courts have affirmed this, where other states have rules that say as long as a ballot was postmarked on election day, regardless of when it comes in, up to a certain legitimate number of days, maybe it's 4 days, maybe it's 7 days, maybe it's 12 days, but that those are legitimate ballots in that state based on that state's rules. Now, the other thing that the Trump administration is, or the Trump campaign is going to try and do, is seek recounts. And there are some states where the rules say if the final result of an election, whether it's for president or for governor or for county clerk, if the final results are within, let's say, half a point, so close that it could almost be a tie, then there's an automatic recount. And we have that in some of the elections that we hold here in California. They also are going to try and get states to throw out ballots that they believe should not have been counted. But the margin for Joe Biden in most of these states is so broad that even if they could throw out some small percentage of ballots for not having been considered legitimate, it's not going to be enough to change the totals. The president wants the Department of Justice to intervene by investigating and acting on alleged irregularities. And then there are other things they can try and do that, in fact, are beyond mischief. They may be legal, but they're dangerous. I'll go through some of that with you as soon as we get back from this break. This is Anita Rufus, the Lovable Liberal. Phone number here is 760-544-8255.
She's lovable. She's liberal. And she's here to bring a tone of civility to political discussion you aren't likely to find anywhere else. The Anita Rufus Show, with your lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
Okay, many of us are celebrating today because Joseph Biden is going to be the president-elect of the United States, and Kamala Harris. And by the way, for those of you who don't know how to pronounce her name, you know how to pronounce the word comma, like what you put in a sentence to break up phrases. C-O-M-M-A. Well, that's the pronunciation of her name. Kamala. Kamala. She says her stepchildren called her Mamala. all these years, which is a nice Yiddish term for your mother. So remember Mamala and you get Kamala. Anyway, Donald Trump said, if you count the legal votes, I easily win. Well, that's not true. And again, it's based on state laws, which votes are legal at what time. And they've had these online sites report voter fraud. And so far, you know, there's one case where a woman said the signature wasn't really her signature. And so they said, well, fine, you can vote a provisional ballot. Provisional ballots get voted counted last, but they are legal. And they said she could sign a provisional ballot if she would sign an affidavit swearing that she hadn't voted already. She refused to sign the affidavit, so that was the end of that. Anyway, the president portrayed the counting of legally cast mail-in ballots as improper. And under various state rules, they are totally proper. He said, our numbers started miraculously getting whittled away in secret. No, it wasn't in secret. It was in places in every state based on the Secretary of State's office and the Registrar of Voters that people were counting ballots in the open. And in almost every case with bipartisan observers watching the counting going on. What is interesting to me, and again, this is this logic thing. Why doesn't Trump think that there weren't any phony votes in states where he won? What is that all about? Those are the kinds of things that make my mind go to work. When there is total lack of logic. Keep counting votes, no matter when they came in, in a state where I'm behind, but stop counting votes and find all the illegal ones in a state where I'm losing. Now, the president did claim that the election was being stolen. And some in the Republican Party are not happy about that because it's an attack on our democracy. And even Republicans, even the most avid Trump supporters, understand that faith in our own system of democracy is an incredibly important thing. We know that the foreign actors who've been trying to intervene in our election want, in fact, to absolutely cause us not to trust our own system, because we have been held out and have held ourselves out for a very long time as the model of democracy in the world. If we don't trust our system, why should anyone else in the world listen to us when we tell them they ought to be going for democracy? So some in the Republican Party are not happy about the things that Trump has said. A Republican member of the House from Illinois, Adam Kinzinger, said that the president's claims of fraud are getting insane. A Republican said that out loud? He said if Trump has legit concerns about fraud, they need to be based on evidence. And then you take them to the court. Maryland Republican Governor Larry Hogan, who is thinking about running in 2024, he said there is no defense for the president's comments. We must respect the results as we always have before. No election or person is more important than our democracy. Okay, so if he can't win based on fraud or in the courts, what are the other things that the Trump campaign can do to try and keep this alive? They can try and force the election to go to the House of Representatives. Now, the election results pretty much have put that idea out of reach. Because in order to go to the House for a determination, they would basically have to have been tied in the number of electoral votes they had, and that has not happened. Another fallback position, which is being pushed by some of the right-wing talk radio nuts, is to rally state legislatures to appoint alternative elector slates. So this is to encourage Republican-led legislatures in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, in Wisconsin, and in Georgia, where it looks like Biden's going to win that one too, to appoint alternative slates of electors. But there was a recent Supreme Court ruling about electors that said they're not independent actors. They're supposed to carry out the will of the state's voters, not just the state legislators. There isn't much left for the president to be able to do, but he's going to do everything he possibly can because this man does not know what it means to lose gracefully at anything. This is Anita Rufus, the lovable liberal, and you are listening to iHub Radio.
In a land so divided, she's a uniter, not a divider. This is the Anita Rufus Show, featuring the lovable liberal on iHub Radio. Here's Anita.
So watching TV right now and looking at people who have spontaneously gathered all over the country. Times Square, Columbus Circle in New York are jammed with people. LA's got people who've poured out into the streets and all over the country. Now, see, that almost made me start to cry because I can feel within myself the kind of tension and anxiety that I have been bottling up for the last several weeks as we headed toward Election Day and what it feels like to finally just feel like I can release that tension. Yeah, it's not over till it's over, but it's basically over. And look, this election had an awful lot of other election results going on that we need to pay attention to. For example, control of the Senate is still not decided. There are two races, two key races in Georgia that are going to have to go to runoffs. And that won't happen until January. So we won't know whether the Republicans retain control of the Senate, although it looks likely, maybe by just one or two seats, which means Mitch McConnell, who did win his election in Kentucky, will still be the head of the Senate if the Republicans have the majority. But Georgia's headed to this runoff in January, two seats in the Senate. And races in North Carolina and Alaska have still not been decided. So it is possible, still possible, that the Republicans could in fact lose control of the Senate, which would make a big difference in the way Joe Biden would be governing as president. And look, the Democrats lost some of the majority they've been holding in the House. They will still have the majority in the House. But so far, seven Democratic incumbents, people already in office in the House, have lost their elections. And it could increase to almost a dozen because there's still not completed counting in a lot of states, including New York and California and Utah. So Democrats will retain control of the House, but with a much slimmer margin. Perhaps a loss of between 7 and 11 seats. And it has always been said after every election, almost every election, that the American people tend to vote for divided government. American people are a little suspicious of the idea that the same party holds the presidency and both houses of Congress, which is, of course, why we tend to get not very much done, no matter how ambitious the agenda of a president might be. Now, the Republicans recruited a lot of women to run for the House this year, and it paid off. Republicans are going to add at least 13 women, if not more, to their ranks in the House of Representatives. They may have as many as 33 women in the Republican conference in the House. And previously, the highest number of Republican women in a freshman class, in a newly elected class, was 9 women. And this time, they may have as many as 33 in their conference. Meanwhile, for what it's worth, there are 88 women serving on the Democratic side of the House of Representatives. Delaware elected the country's first transgender state senator. We've had transgender people in local city councils, for example, in Palm Springs. There have been transgender people in various positions on a local level. But this is the first time that a transgender woman is elected as a state senator in the state of Delaware, which is coincidentally also Joe Biden's state. Democrat Sarah McBride won a state Senate race in Delaware and will become the first openly transgender state senator in the United States. Transgender representation has grown in elected offices, and why shouldn't it have? State legislatures in 6 states handed 8 transgender, non-binary, or gender non-conforming candidates victories in state legislatures this past week in this election. And I will continue to say that our society, our culture, our species, if you will, continues to take 2 steps forward for every step back. And we do occasionally take steps backwards, in my view, like having Donald Trump in the White House for 4 years. But every time we take a step backward, we do tend to take 2 steps forward. Our direction is irrevocably forward and toward the future, not toward the past. Now, down ballot races, and what they mean by that is something other than the president or a national figure. Down ballot are your state Senate and House, governors, local races. And in down ballot races, a lot of state House seats were also up for grabs, and with them comes a lot of power. Because, you know, the Constitution says any power that is not granted directly to the federal government in the Constitution remains with the states, which is where the whole concept of states' rights comes from. More than 5,000 legislative seats, 80% of the total, in 44 of the 50 states were at stake in this election. And why this is so important is because 2020 is the 10-year mark where redistricting takes place in the states. And in most states, redistricting is done by the state legislature. This is drawing districts for House seats and, you know, we've seen some of those bizarre, insane drawings where a district is drawn either to protect a Republican or to protect a Democrat or to throw a district in one direction or the other. And whoever sits in the state legislature in most states gets to redraw both the state and the federal electoral maps. And in this case, Republicans have retained most of their ability to control state legislatures throughout the country. Now, down ballot races also include ballot initiatives. And you know, in California, we always have that very long, complicated ballot. In California, one of the things that was shown to be important to California voters was access to Uber and Lyft. What was on our ballot was whether or not drivers for Uber and Lyft were going to be considered to be employees of those companies and entitled to the protections that employees get. Things like sick leave, access to Social Security, things like that. Well, when you have an employee, it costs the company some money because, for example, for Social Security, FICA payments have to be matched by the company when they're taken out of an employee's paycheck. If you're an independent contractor, there's no particular rules about how you're treated as an employee. You got to file your own taxes. You got to pay your own Social Security if you're going to pay it in as a self-employed person. And a lot of people who get paid as independent contractors fly under the radar and don't pay anything. Also in California, raising property taxes on commercial properties was narrowly defeated. And this was a hotly contested issue on the California ballot. Many, many years ago, there was that proposition that said that property taxes cannot be raised indiscriminately when the same person is still living in a house. And this was done to protect older homeowners who were getting priced out of their ability to stay in their lifelong homes because the taxes went up so high on their property. So taxes were frozen to only raise by a certain percentage unless and until the property was sold outside of that family. Well, it turns out that that same provision also applied to commercial properties. So lots of companies were building big office buildings, renting out space, making money on the property. But as long as the corporation kept title to the building itself, their property taxes were only allowed to go up the same amount as that mom and pop living in the suburb. Well, this item that was on the California ballot would have taken that off of commercial properties. But the advertisements by small business owners who couldn't afford to have that happen to where they were still managing to keep their store open. Anyway, that got voted down. And so property taxes will continue to stay affordable, if you want to use that word, to not only individual homeowners, but to commercial property owners as well. There was also an item on the California ballot about requiring doctors at kidney dialysis clinics. A lot of those clinics could not afford to bring a doctor on. They tend to work with licensed vocational nurses there or registered nurses. So there is at least some medical oversight. But the advertisements from people who require kidney dialysis, who are scared to death that their local clinic would close if this passed, those arguments prevailed in this election. And the voters of California defeated that initiative to require doctors at kidney dialysis clinics. There was also something on the California ballot, partly in response to the whole Black Lives Matter movement, but also because at a point in time on a previous ballot that Californians voted for, they voted down the idea of using affirmative action in hiring in the state of California. Well, the state wanted to reestablish affirmative action for hiring in California to make sure that we really do pay attention to the kind of diversity that we need in all of our state offices. But that was voted down by the voters. They did not want affirmative action coming back in California. So we'll have to find better ways to make people able to move toward a more diverse workforce that represents the people of the state, but without having to pay special attention to what their race or background might be. You're listening to The Lovable Liberal on iHub Radio.
The Lovable Liberal continues now on iHub Radio. Here's Anita Rufus.
So the 2020 elections are over, except for the tears and the lawsuits. State ballot initiatives, however, have a life of their own because they change the way state laws are constructed and the way the people of a state will live. I've gone through a few of them, especially here in California, but there were state initiatives all over the country, and it's worth paying some attention. Florida, for example, in spite of the fact that 61% of the voters in Florida voted for Donald Trump, they also voted to raise the minimum wage in Florida to $15 an hour by 2026, so over the next 6 years. But at least it's something to try and set a standard, since we seem to be having so much trouble doing it at the federal level, by where people can actually afford to live if they have a job. Although $15 an hour doesn't afford living very well. In Colorado, on the ballot was a ban on late-term abortions. That did not pass. Colorado voters did not approve that. New Jersey, South Dakota, and Arizona all voted to legalize recreational marijuana, which we now have that law in California. And all I can say is thank goodness, because without that law, I could never have gotten through this election. Oregon went a step further. In Oregon, they've now become the first state, on the basis of the voters of the state having approved, a measure to decriminalize possessing a small amount of any street drug, including crack, heroin. If you're carrying only enough for personal use, you get ticketed and fined something like $100. And you can obviate the fine if you are willing voluntarily to talk to somebody over the phone about your own health condition, why you rely on a drug, and whether or not you might be wanting to go into some kind of a program to help you get off of it. But it is no longer criminalized to have a small amount of a drug in your possession in the state of Oregon for personal use. Obviously, if you're still dealing in drugs, forget about it. Mississippi voted to adopt a new flag. You know, there was a big uproar about the fact that they still had, they were the only state left that still had a Confederate flag symbol on their state flag. They voted to adopt a new state flag, and the new flag has their state flower, a magnolia, and it contains some stars, and it says, "In God We Trust." And the voters of the state decided they wanted to adopt that new flag and get rid of that terrible, terrible Confederate flag, although some of them thought they should still hold on to that. Now, I want to share with you, there was a column in the LA Times written by a guy named Nicholas Goldberg, and I was very impressed with what he said. It was how Trump has won no matter the election results. So those of us who are happy that Joe Biden has now been declared the winner of the presidential election and will in fact get even more electoral votes than required for him to be declared. Nicholas Goldberg says Trump has won no matter what the results are. And here's his take on it. He said, on one level, Donald Trump has already won. He's won because he has sown exactly the kind of discord he thrives on. He's won because he's divided us still further in ways that will stay with us long after he has left office. He's turned adversaries into enemies, undermined our democratic institutions, and convinced us that we're cheating each other. He is continuing to undermine the electoral system itself with unsubstantiated charges of voter fraud. Where there's chaos and confusion, Trump flourishes. Goldberg goes on to say, for tens of millions of people to double down and vote for him again in 2020 is entirely different. It's an assertion by those voters that, yes, that is who we really are, and that what the United States has become over the last 4 years is really what they want it to be. Their votes send a message to the world that this bizarre and untrustworthy man didn't weasel his way into the most powerful job in the world by fooling the great American people. Rather, he was and remains their conscious choice. The message that his voters send is that they're okay with self-dealing, bullying and lying, intentionally or not. They're giving a big thumbs up to the way he talks about women, his refusal to denounce things like QAnon, the government dollars flowing into hotels, his political chicanery in places like Ukraine, and his racial dog whistles. Goldberg concludes by saying that does not bode well for the months and years ahead. Even if Trump is gone, Trumpism is not going away. The question for all of us to look inside ourselves and ask, is this who we are as a people? Is this who we are as a nation? When almost half of the population, for whatever reasons they give to justify it, when almost half of the population has supported that kind of lack of character and morality, what does it say about our country? And what can those of us who didn't agree with them, what can we do to try and heal those breaches in who we are and how we want to see ourselves and how we want the world to see us? Brian is here with me in the last minute. I'll give you a minute. What do you want to say about this election?
You caught me off guard a little bit.
Go for it.
It's important to relax for a moment, celebrate, but it's also good not to stay complacent and to keep fighting for the good fight. Joe Biden is not the solution to everything, but he got rid of one of the most venomous symptoms of the larger problems, and I really appreciate that. And also, when I see little girls dress up as Kamala Harris, there's something really inspiring about that. It's just wonderful. But honestly, I just gotta say I'm happy. I'm really happy that things are starting to look a little brighter now.
Well, it does feel better, I'll give you that. Okay, stick around for another hour. What's coming up is what is Biden gonna do?